That is none other than Claire Oakes, and I'm very happy that she put out this wonderful CD called Kirtan Equation, Sacred Sound and Presence plus Love equals Kirtan, says Claire. And she's also going to be at the Boston Yoga and Chant Festival in 2011. We'll give you more details about that as we go. We've got a group of people joining us in the studio, I'm happy to say. We're going to be talking about, and I'll tell you all about who they are and their names, et cetera. The project is called Children at the Well. It's in 2005, the Interfaith Story of the Tri-City Area launched Children at the Well, an interfaith, intergenerational storytelling venture to involve youth in learning the art of storytelling. And in using this are to, one, deepen their knowledge and understanding of their own faith and that of others. Two, get to know people of other faiths. Three, participate in the local interfaith story circle meetings and its community events. And four, promote peace and understanding among all peoples. Children at the Well received a 2006 Brimstone Award for Applied Storytelling from the National Storytelling Network, and this award focuses on the transformational properties of storytelling and aims to increase understanding of the ways that storytelling can promote change in individuals and communities. The use of the informing metaphor of a well is in the title because of envisioning the process of young people gathering to delve into the treasures of wisdom in their own traditions to be similar in ways to the age-old custom of youth at the village well, drawing water to bring back to their families and sustain them. The image of well water drawn from the depths is particularly powerful for us as an agent of sustenance, growth, and change. These are precisely the effects that we wish our program to have. 2011 will be the Children at the Well's sixth year of bringing young people and their families of different faiths together in a subtle way by developing and sharing stories from each of your young person's own tradition, rather than by trying to change minds politically. And it's my great pleasure to introduce our guests, starting with Marnie Gillard.
Marnie Gillard,
who has been teaching young people to tell stories since 1979, a former teacher, now professional teller. She is the author of Storyteller, Teacher, The Power of Storytelling for Teaching and Living, and has written several articles on the teaching of storytelling. She recorded five life tales, which echo her Catholic upbringing on Without a Splash, Diving into Childhood Memories at the Story Studio in Schenectady, New York.
That's right.
And Marnie offers classes for young and old tellers looking for the stories within. You can reach her at worldwideweb.marniegillard.com, MarniGillard.com.
Yes, Gary, it's great to be back. Thanks so much for having us.
And thank you. And it's a great pleasure to have you. And Paula Weiss would be here, but she couldn't make it because of some problem with her automobile. But and she really regrets not being able to come. So we want to say hi to Paula, and I know she's listening.
Yeah, miss you, Paula. But thanks for all your support.
Right, and we have some storytellers with us in the studio. Why don't we just go around and first of all introduce ourselves, starting with Sarah.
Hi, my name is Sarah Sayed, and I joined Children at the Well 4 years ago. So this is my fourth year currently.
And she's a sophomore at Niskayuna High School.
Yeah.
And attends the Islamic Center of the Capital District. And you're very active in the Girl Scouts.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And next we have
Emily.
Emily, tell me about yourself, Emily.
This is my fourth year also in Children at the Well, and I'm a sophomore at Notre Dame Bishop Gibbons High School.
Yes. You're in the 10th grade?
Yes.
Yeah, of Notre Dame, Bishop Gibbons, mm-hmm. and in Schenectady, and you're a varsity cheerleader.
Yes.
You're an actress in the children's musicals, and a member of the yearbook staff. And you're also part of the Mormon Youth Group and attends Eastern Parkway United Methodist Church.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And followed by,
I'm Ben Russell.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. I've been in Children at the Well since its inception. Well, I'm not really in it anymore, but, you know, still help out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, and Ben is a 2010 graduate of Shenandoah High School and a student of Hudson Valley Community College. And again, as Ben said, he's been a member of Children of the Well since its beginning. In 2006, he is the youth director at Congregational Beth Shalom in Clifton Park as well. Thank you, Ben, for being with us.
Thank you.
And yes, and your name?
Aditya Agashi.
Aditya Agashi, tell us about yourself.
I attend Shaker High School, and this is my second year here.
Yes, and you and your family attend the Hindu Temple Society in Latham. By the way, I go there, the Hindu, but I'm very much attracted to that. You enjoy many activities: chess, storytelling, robotics, engineering, programming, computers, and technology. Gee, maybe you're going to come to go to RPI. You sound like a future RPI student. Tennis, swimming, and problem solving. Where do you plan on taking this?
Well, I want to go into either engineering or medicine in the future.
Good, good. Best wishes to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we covered everybody. Now we're gonna begin the storytelling. Marnie, you want to introduce this?
Well, Sarah has volunteered to go first. She has a wonderful story about the beginning of Islam and a very special moment that Muslims hold dear. Sarah.
Oh, good.
This is the story of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the spider web. A long time ago, there was a man named Muhammad in the city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia. This man was a pretty normal man. He could not read or write like most people, but he was a successful merchant. And there was something different about him. He was always looking for a way of life, a straight path. He was always searching for something, for the meaning of life. And one day, he got the miraculous revelation of the Quran from God. It was sent from Angel Gabriel, and when he received this revelation, he was terrified, and he didn't know why had God picked him. But Angel Gabriel told him, "You are God's messenger, and you must tell all of the world that there is only one God, and you are his messenger." So Muhammad learned that he recited the Quran until he memorized it with the angel, and eventually it was time for him to teach this to all of Mecca. Now, Muhammad was a very trustworthy man. He was known for being very truthful and easy to trust. People even left their valuables and belongings with him when they would go on traveling trips, and he was just very trustworthy. Now, when Muhammad started preaching this new religion to everyone, the people didn't believe him. They said, "One God? How can this be?" And they had worshipped their idols from their forefathers and their ancestors, and they said to him, "You want us to leave our idols and our gods and go for this one God of yours? What proof do you have?" And the Prophet said, "I received this revelation. I have the Quran. There is only one God." And he said, "You must listen to me." And people just started to say, "He's gone crazy, and what's gone wrong with him? There cannot be only one God. We have worshipped our many gods for so many years. This cannot be true." And the Prophet persisted, and he said to everyone, "Please, you have to believe me. There is one God, and I am his messenger." Now, people started to wonder, if we could trust Muhammad so much before this, why not now? And people said, oh, he's gone crazy. That's why we can't trust him. He has gone crazy. This is not true. And some people even said, Muhammad is out for power. He just wants to control the people of Mecca. This is not true what he says. He's made it all up. But people began to think and think. And they said, I think we should see what Muhammad has to say. So they listened to him, and they liked what they heard. This one God and this path, and it was simple, yet such a divine message. And people began to gather around in Muhammad's house, and they said, Muhammad, tell us more about this new religion called Islam. Tell us, what is this? And the prophet would preach to the people, and as time went on, more and more people would come to his house, and they would gather around him excitedly, and they would say, tell us more, please. And the leaders of Mecca, they said, oh, this is such a fad that the people will realize soon that they'll go back to worshiping their old idols, and this will die down eventually. There's no need to worry about him. But as time went on, more and more people began listening to this new religion of Islam, and eventually almost all of Mecca was involved in this Islam, and they said there is only one God, and Muhammad is his messenger. Now the leaders were starting to worry, and they said, oh, we know why Muhammad is doing this. He is all out for power. He knows that once he has the belief of the people of Mecca, he can control our power. Who is he to take our power from us? He cannot read or write. We are the true leaders, and we must show this to the people. This has gotten way out of hand. And the leaders started to make up a cruel and terrible plan. And this plan was to go at night to the prophet's house in his own bed, and they would kill him at night. And Abu Bakr, the prophet's best friend, heard of this plan. And he was also very high up in leadership in Mecca. And once he heard of this plan, He began to tremble and was so scared. He ran to the prophet's house and he said, oh, Muhammad, I've heard of a terrible plan. You must listen to me. And the prophet came and he said, what is it, Abu Bakr? What is it? And Abu Bakr was trembling and he said, the leaders of Mecca, they've decided that they're going to kill you tonight in your own house, in your own bed. They cannot do this, Muhammad. What are we going to do? This is terrible. And the prophet nodded and he calmly said, Abu Bakr, we must always have trust in God. Whatever is God's will shall happen. And we must have faith in God. And with these words, Abu Bakr calmed down a bit. And he said, you're right, Muhammad, you're right. But what shall we do? And with that, they both made a plan of their own. Their plan was to leave at night before the killers would come, and they would escape to Mecca, which was a few days away. But they would have to go on foot, for it would be way too dangerous to go on camel or horseback. So the time came for them to leave at night, and they both snuck out, and they started on their journey to Medina. Now, they began on their journey, and they grew tired later on. It was now morning, and they decided to stop by in a village. And while they were replenishing themselves, they heard from some villagers that there was a reward for the prophet, the capture of him. There was a large sum of money as a reward, And they also heard that many of the citizens of the village were looking for the prophet for this reward. And even the leaders were probably soon on their way to catch the prophet. And they even probably had a head start, for they would have probably been on camel or horse. And they knew that they had to start moving quickly. So they went on their way again. And they started walking and walking, and it soon grew night again, and they knew that they needed a place to sleep, and not for a very long time, but they needed a place to hide so that if the leaders caught up to them, they would not find them. So they started walking and walking, searching for a place, and sure enough, they found a little cave, and this cave was the cave of Thar. And they soon situated themselves in the cave and grew comfortable, and they were getting ready to sleep when the prophet said, "Wait, before we do anything, we must pray to God." So they both threw up their hands and they said, "Oh Allah, please help us. We have faith in you. You brought us down to this earth, and only you will bring us back up. We have faith in you, and you are the only God. Amen." And with that, they both fell asleep. Now, it was not more than an hour that Abu Bakr awoke, for he heard the sounds of footsteps and pitter, patter. Pitter, patter, pitter, patter, pitter, patter. And these were the sounds of horse hooves and camels. And he heard the neighs of the camels and the horses. And he began to panic. And what was that? He was starting to hear voices growing louder and louder. And he began to panic. And he awoke the prophet. And he said, "Muhammad, listen, listen, they're here. They're coming." And they both listened silently, and all of a sudden, they heard a voice, and they heard the footsteps stop, and they knew that they were right outside of this cave, and they heard the voice say, "Oh, they cannot be in here. Look at this. No one's probably been in here for years. Come on, they're probably on their way somewhere here. Let's take a move on now." And with that, they heard the footsteps fading away and the pitter, patter, pitter, patter, pitter, patter, pitter, patter, pitter, patter. It was gone. The voices and the noises were gone. And they looked at each other, Abu Bakr and Muhammad did, and Abu Bakr said, "Wait here, Muhammad. I will go check to make sure that it's all clear." So Abu Bakr quietly walked towards the entrance and he gasped. And the prophet said, "What is it, Abu Bakr? What is it? Please tell me what is it." And Abu Bakr said, "Oh, Muhammad, Muhammad, come look. Come look what it is." And the prophet walked towards the entrance and look, there was a beautiful silver spider web. And right outside of the cave, there was a big bird's nest. And they knew that those were not there before about an hour ago. And how could all of these have appeared in less than an hour? And the spider web gleamed and in the moonlight, and it was beautiful. And Abu Bakr said to Muhammad, What is this? How has this come here?" And they knew that this being here showed that no one could have been in this cave for many years, which was obviously not true. And Muhammad smiled a bit, and the prophet said, "This here, this is God's miracle." Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Syed?
Yes.
Yeah, Syed. Thank you for your story, and I appreciate it. Now, this is, again, I want to remind people that just tuning in, the metaphor of the children at the well, where did they actually do this, Marnie, in times past? Were they gathered at the well to tell stories?
Well, certainly people gathered at the well of people, all ages.
Yeah.
But we took that metaphor of the place where sustenance was and nurturing was, and that our children would come together and they would find this thing of peace in the well. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Very, very well said. And
thank you.
I learned a lot on that story. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we're gonna do a short break, and then a few seconds, and then we'll be right back. It won't be just hang on a few seconds here.
10,000 watts of pure alternative radio. This is 91.5 WRPI Troy.
You're listening to WRPI Troy, New York, the best radio station in the world. Yay!
And you are listening to WRPI Troy, of course. This is Gary Goldberg for In the Spirit, and you just heard the story of Sarah Syed. It was very beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Marnie Gillard is here and with the children at the well. The well is this room right now. I guess this is what the well is, which offers nourishment and sustenance. And we're going deep into the well water, bringing this water of life to all our listeners.
Lovely, Gary. You couldn't have said it better.
and so to receive more sustenance and nourishment, we go to the next storyteller.
Okay.
And that is Emily Engler Hebert, right?
Yes.
Okay. And tell us your story, please.
My story is about Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace. Thank you. And remember to speak into the mic. Okay.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. This song was written by John Newton, a man who knew what it was like to live a hard and difficult life. When he was a very young boy, his mother died, and so he was raised by his father, who was a merchant on the sea. So he grew up on the sea, around sailors, and leading a very free, without boundaries lifestyle. By the time he was only 11 years old, he had already made 6 voyages across the sea trading with his father. Now, these sailors, it was a very rough lifestyle. He got used to just being on his own and freedom constantly. So it came as a very big shock to him when, at only 19 years old, he was drafted into the British Navy. In the Navy, it was completely different. He couldn't adjust to it. It was rigid and strict, and it just was so different than what he knew. So he abandoned his post and he fled. But unfortunately, the British Navy, they captured him and they publicly beat him and put him down to a lower rank. Now, after a few more months of this, he was rescued by a slave trader. Now, he thought that this would be something new, a way to make a new beginning, but after a few months, the slave trader had started to treat him just like one of the slaves, and his clothes had turned to rags. So, again, he escaped, and time passed, and he was able to become the captain of his own slave ship, perhaps because selling and being a merchant is all that he knew. When he continued trading slaves and made many, many voyages and became very successful. Now, there was one night when he was making one particular voyage where he was not trading slaves. And it was the middle of the night, and he was woken up by a crash into the side of the ship. And water was filling his cabin, and he ran upstairs, and he looked around, and there was a huge storm, and a hole in the middle of the boat. People were screaming, and there was so much chaos, and he was standing in the middle of it, just looking around, like, awestruck by what he was seeing. And he realized, I could die right now. And when something in him just remembered what his mother, as a young boy, taught him about God, and he screamed out, Lord, have mercy on me! And when he did that, the cargo, which was beeswax, all came out and stopped up the hole, and the ship was able to float to safety. Now, John Newton had no idea why this happened. This experience haunted him for so long, and he started to think, what am I doing? Why am I leading this lifestyle? He was considering giving it up, but then he was forced to when he got extremely sick from so many years on the sea. And he was forced to give up life on the sea forever. So he became a merchant on the land in Britain, and he was thinking about God, about his experience that one night, and one day he was sitting in a chapel, and he was praying, and he was crying, and a Methodist minister came up to him, and he cried to him and told him all of the horrible things that he had done over his life, and he was so full of remorse and regret. And this minister told him about the new religion, Methodism, and what it offered. And John Newton really liked this idea, and he wanted to know more about it. So he started studying it. And he loved it so much that he wanted to become a Methodist minister on his own. And every time he tried, they rejected him because of his background, his lifestyle before. But he persisted, and he finally was able to become a Methodist minister. And he wrote many poems and many songs, one of which is Amazing Grace. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Twas grace hath brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. That's a beautiful story. They made a movie of that. I saw it's just really wonderful. And he wrote this Amazing Grace about basically his life, just so being grateful and reminding him of that voyage where the beeswax slid over the hole and when he prayed to God. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to continue our stories from the storytellers of the Children at the Well here on WRPI Troy, and we've heard from Sarah Syed and Emily Engler Hebert. Now we have a couple other people coming up and going to share some stories. And as you remember, the Children at the Well, and the metaphor of drawing the sustenance up from the deep well, and as it applied from age old customs of bringing back the sustenance that our families, and this is we're a global family.
And we are.
We are a global family, and we need to sustain each other.
We absolutely do. You know, we have a performance coming up this Sunday, Gary. Oh,
tell us about it.
It's at St. Helen's Church on Union Street in Schenectady. That's where it's located, at 2:00 Sunday afternoon. It's a family performance that's a mixture of some members from the Adult Interfaith Story Guild.
Yes.
And we'll have some of our teens in it. Emily's going to be telling her Amazing Grace story.
Beautiful, beautiful voice, too.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And we're inviting guests, so we really sort of spread the arts out. We'll have an Indian dancer. We're going to have another singer from another tradition. And Oh, we have a choir. We have the Muslim An-Nur School.
Wonderful.
Choir is going to come. So we'll have our guests. So it'll be stories, song, and dance.
Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful time. What time does it begin?
2 o'clock, Sunday afternoon.
2 o'clock, Sunday at St. Helens.
Open to the public, so we're happy to have everybody.
Is this on some website, Children at the Well?
Yes. They could find it at childrenatthewell.org.
Okay. Good, mm-hmm. good. So I want to make sure that everybody knows the website that for this event and other events.
Absolutely. You can find out more about our program.
Programs,
we go throughout the year and we bring
and
our
what you're all
stories.
About and how they can contribute if they wish.
Absolutely.
Stuff like that, right?
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay. And now our next storyteller is
Aditya Agashi.
Well, thank you for being with us very much, Aditya Agashi. And you can begin your story.
Okay. The story that I'm about to tell is one of the stories from the long Hindu epic, the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, there was a great king, and this king had 5 sons. Now, the eldest of these sons, his name was Yudhishthira. Now, Yudhishthira, being the eldest, took charge of the other brothers, and he was their sole leader. And he was also the smartest of the brothers, or so he thought. The second oldest son, his name was Bhima. Now, Bhima was the strongest of all the brothers, and strongest in all of the court in India. And he could lift absolutely anything that you told him to. And other than that, he could cook and eat. Now, the third oldest son, his name was Arjuna. And Arjuna was very diligent and focused. And whenever he was given a task, he would accomplish it thoroughly and fully. And the last two brothers, their names were Nakula and Sahadev. And these two brothers were skilled in other weapons fighting, such as sword fighting, and they took care of the horses, and in addition to that, they took care of the other brothers. Since these were the younger brothers, they took care of Yudhishthira, Arjuna, and Bhima. Now, the ancient custom in India was that when boys reach the age of about 11 to 12, they are sent off to a guru or teacher to learn. And since these were the sons of the finest king in all of India, they were sent off to the best teacher that the king could find. And this teacher's name was Dronacharya. Now Drona, as people called him, was a great teacher and an even better archer. But there was only one flaw. He was very, very strict. And you had to obey each and every command that he told you. Otherwise, he would get very mad. Now, these brothers were sent off to learn with Drona. And Drona began to teach them the art of meditation and how to cleanse one's mind of all thoughts so that you can be focused for the task at hand. And once Drona had taught them this, and once he believed that they had understood it, he began to teach them a new topic. And this topic was archery. And he began to teach the brothers how to hold a bow, and how to string the bow, and how to shoot an arrow, and the trajectory of the arrow. And he began teaching them the fundamentals of archery. And once after their session, after their study session, Drona was sitting by a banyan tree meditating. And this banyan tree was just a peaceful sight. This banyan tree had many vines that sunk into the ground, and there was grass, newly grown grass, that was all around the tree. And Drona was sitting there meditating, saying, Om. And while Drona was meditating, a thought popped into his mind. He thought, I wonder if my pupils are learning anything that I teach them. I think I should take an examination. I will go tell them immediately. And so, with that, he went to inform his students about the exam that he was going to take. He went to his students and he told them, My fellow pupils, tomorrow you will have an examination. I want you all to do well, so I want you to review everything that I have taught you, because this is a very important examination. And so with that, he sent them off. And these brothers had a good dinner, and they got a good night's sleep. And the next morning, they woke up before the crack of dawn, and for a couple of hours, they began to meditate. And after their first meditation session, they ate a good breakfast, and then they continued to meditate so that they would be peaceful and calm and focused for the examination that was at hand. And Yudhishthira, while he was meditating, after a while, he thought he heard something in the distance. And so he slowly opened his eyes, and there he saw Drona was calling them for the examination. And so Yudhishthira got up, and he said overconfidently, "My brothers, come, get up. I'm going to show you how it is done. I will get the first 100 today, and then you can all copy me so that we can all get 100. And so he had them stand up, and he had them stand in a line behind him. And the brothers walked to Drona. And Drona told Yudhishthira once they got there that he had placed a small wooden bird in the banyan tree. And Drona told Yudhishthira, "I have placed a small wooden bird in that banyan tree there. Now, your task is to take my bow and this arrow, and I want you to shoot that bird." And now Yudhishthira thought for a minute. And then he began to think, "Wow, this is such an easy exam. I'm surely going to get 100. And he was very overconfident. And Yudhishthira took the arrow, and he strung the bow, and he was about to fire the bow, but Drona stopped him. And Drona said, "Now, Yudhishthira, before you shoot, I want you to answer one question. What do you see in that tree over there?" And Yudhishthira, once again, overconfidently replied, "Oh, great Drona, what I see is a banyan tree, and this banyan tree has many leaves and vines that are sinking into the ground, and it has a large trunk, it has many grass seeds that are all around." And now Drona was mad because Yudhishthira had failed the exam. And so Drona yelled. He said, "Are Baba Yudhishthira, what are you doing? I cannot even talk to you. Get out of my sight." And so he sent him off. And so once Drona had fully calmed down, he got back up and he told the next brother in line, Bhima, that it was his turn. And now Bhima was nervous because the smartest of the brothers had just been told off and had failed the exam. So when Drona asked Bhima what he saw in the tree, Bhima began to think of a way to impress Drona. And Bhima thought for a minute, and then an idea came to him. Bhima, once Drona asked him, ran over to the tree, and he broke off some of the vines and picked up all the branches that he could find, and he began lifting. And he told Drona, "Look at this. I can lift a whole bundle with my left hand." And he began to lift all the branches. And Drona was furious. He said, "Bhima, I have not told you to lift up branches. This is not a lifting competition. Okay? You have to hit the bird, not lift branches. This is useless." And so he sent him off. And now everyone was nervous because the two oldest sons had just failed the exam, and now Drona was very irritated. And so the next two brothers in line were Nakula and Sahadev. And these two brothers, like the other two brothers, both got the question wrong. And no one said that they saw the bird. Everyone just saw the scenery and everything but the bird. And so when the last brother in line, Arjuna, it was his turn to answer. And now Drona was not at all confident in Arjuna because all of the brothers had gotten it wrong. So Drona was expecting very little. And Drona asked Arjuna, "I want you to tell me what you see in that tree over there." And Arjuna was not at all nervous. He was very calm and peaceful. And he immediately replied, "Oh, great Drona, what I see is only the eye of the small wooden bird that you have placed in that banyan tree." And now Drona was shocked because only Arjuna had gotten the question right. And so he said, "Good job, my boy. But your test isn't over." Mm-hmm. That's the second part. And so Drona gave Arjuna the bow and the arrow, and he told him, "Arjuna, the second part of your exam is to shoot the eye of the bird. Let me see what you have learned." And so Arjuna still was not at all nervous. He was quite confident and peaceful and focused. And Arjuna took the bow and he strung it. And he took the arrow and he aimed and he fired. And that arrow hit the dead center of the bird's eye. And now Drona was satisfied. He said, "Good job, Arjuna. You have accomplished the task and you have passed the exam." And then he called all the brothers and he had them sit in front of him in a semicircle. And he told them, "Now, all of you have failed, except for Arjuna. Arjuna is the only brother here that has gotten 100% on this exam." He was not at all nervous. He was very calm and focused and peaceful. And for this reason, he was prepared for this exam. Secondly, he was not distracted by anything like you guys. He only saw the eye of the bird, while you guys saw the scenery and everything else. And I want you to learn from this. If you are calm, focused, and concentrated in your life, you can achieve absolutely anything that you want. And with this, Drona dismissed the brothers. And these brothers later used this lesson in their life and were very successful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adia Agashi from Shaker High School, sophomore. And thank you for your story.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. Another story from the Children at the Well that we're hearing today on In the Spirit. And we have another story coming up, so please stay tuned. And I want to thank everybody that we've heard so far, Sarah Syed and Mohammed. Thank you for that, and thank you. Yes, and also Emily Engler-Hebert, a 10th grade at Notre Dame Bishop Gibbons School. I want to thank you again for your story about Amazing Grace and singing that, and also your much luck in your acting career and what you're doing with that and with your school. You're definitely creative. And I really appreciate Adia Agashi for that story as well, and great lesson in that when we follow what was really asked of us, we have great success, and it's never too late to learn the lesson either. All the brothers finally learned it and went on to be successful, and we have another story. Marnie Gillard is with us. She's been teaching these young people to tell stories since 1979. She's a former teacher, a professional teller now, and author of Storyteller, Story Teacher, the Power of Storytelling for Teaching and Living, and has written several articles on the teaching of storytelling. And she recorded 5 life tales which echo her Catholic upbringing on Without a Splash, Diving into Childhood Memories at the Troy Studio in Schenectady, New York. Marnie offers classes for young and old tellers. And looking for stories within, you can reach her at marniegillard.com, MarnieGillard.com. And also St. Helens on
this Sunday afternoon.
Sunday.
Yeah, 2:00. It's St. Helens in Schenectady, yeah, which is right on Union Street, Upper Union Street.
Right.
We're having a concert of adult and student tellers. And we've have some invited guests who are dancers and the choir from Indian dancers, Hindu dancers.
Wonderful.
And the choir from the Muslim school.
It's going to be great. 2:00 this Sunday, St. Helens. And also the website for your group is
childrenatthewell.org.
And we have our next story. Thank you. And this is Ben Russell. He's a 2010 graduate of Shenandoah High School and a student at Hudson Valley Community College. He's been with the Children at the Well since the beginning. In 2006, he's the youth director of Congregational Beth Shalom in Clifton Park. Okay, go ahead, Ben.
Hi.
Hi.
My story takes place in the town of Chelm. The town of Chelm is a town of fools. Well, some people say it's a town of people who are very, very wise. But they're so wise that no one understands them and thinks them foolish. But that doesn't really matter. The town of Chelm is a rather odd town. one of the things that makes it so strange is some very weird signs. For example, under a lamp in the middle of the town, there's a sign that says, "Search here." Now, to someone not from Chelm, this sign makes no sense at all. But to someone from Chelm, this sign makes perfect sense. If you lose something at night, the perfect place to look for it would be where you can see, under the light. Another sign in the town makes even less sense, though. It's right outside the town hall, and it says, "A schoolteacher may not live on a hill. A schoolteacher may not own a chest with wheels. And a schoolteacher may not have apple strudel." Well, this sign makes no sense at all to someone not from Chelm. But in Chelm, this sign is very important, and it makes so much sense. You see, long ago in Chelm, there lived a schoolteacher. His name was Zaniel, and he lived atop a hill with his wife, Zelda. Zaniel did not make much money. It wasn't that he was a bad schoolteacher. He was an amazing schoolteacher. It was just that Chelm was not a very rich town, and the Chelmites were unable to pay Zaniel much. But he was all right. Zaniel and Zelda always had enough for candles each Shabbat, and they were happy. But Zaniel and Zelda began to be invited to parties that the Chelmites were having, because whenever a child was born, or a child was married, or there was a baby being born, they always wanted the schoolteacher there. And at all of the celebrations, there was always apple strudel. Zaniel and Zelda loved apple strudel. Now, we all know what apple strudel is, but Chelm apple strudel, it's amazing. It's flaky. The apples are so sweet and delicious. It's the greatest apple strudel in the entire world. And Zaniel and Zelda loved it. They wanted more apple strudel. They could not have more apple strudel. They didn't have the money. So Zaniel and Zelda went about their days thinking always of apple strudel. And one night, while they slept, Zelda had a dream. And she woke up from the dream, and she yelled at her husband, "Zaniel, Zaniel, wake up! I had an amazing dream!" And Zaniel stood up and he said, "What is it? What is it? What was your dream? Why are you waking me up at night?" And Zelda said to him, "In my dream, we pulled out the chest with wheels, the one you got from your grandfather, and every day we put in one zloty, one coin, and by the time summer came, we had enough coins to buy all the ingredients for apple strudel we needed, and I could make us all the apple strudel we wanted." Zaniel started jumping up and down. "You're amazing! You're a genius! I love you!" So this is just what they did. The next morning, they rolled out the chest with wheels that Zaniel had gotten from his grandfather. And in the top of the chest, they cut a little hole. And Zaniel and Zelda each took one zloty, one coin, and dropped it in. This went on for a few days. The next day, Zaniel and Zelda went up to the box again to put in another zloty. But they each began thinking. Zaniel thought to himself, "I'm a poor schoolteacher. I don't have enough money to put in one coin each day. I need to repair the schoolhouse. I need to buy books. I need to buy pens. I can't afford this. My wife doesn't need money. She stays at home all day. She doesn't need any of this. Her half will be more than enough." So Zaniel stopped putting coins in. Meanwhile, Zelda started thinking to herself, and she thought, "I don't work, I don't have an income, I just get some coins from Zaniel, and I need to buy shoes, I need to buy clothing, I need to buy food, I need to fix the house. I can't afford this. My husband's money will be more than enough. Zaniel always keeps his word. He will put the money in, and I won't have to." So Zelda stopped putting a coin in also. And neither of them knew the other had stopped. Weeks and weeks went by. Months and months. And finally, it was time to open the chest. Zaniel and Zelda stood on either side of the chest. They were so anxious, and slowly they opened the lid and looked inside. And there were two coins. Just two coins. "We've been robbed!" cried Zaniel. "Oh no, what will we do?" cried Zelda. "All our money, all the apple strudel, what will we do, Zaniel?" And they started pacing around the chest, and then they realized something. And Zaniel said, "If we were robbed, why would the thieves take all but two coins?" Well, this didn't make any sense. Slowly, their eyes met. They pointed at one another. "You! You did not put coins, and you promised you would, but you didn't!" And Zelda yelled out, "But I need my money, I don't have an income!" And Zaniel yelled out, I need my money, I need the schoolhouse, you don't work, you didn't need anything!" And started arguing and arguing louder and louder. And then Zelda fell into the chest. And she started yelling, "Zaniel, Zaniel, help me, help me!" And Zaniel, he reached in to pull his wife out, but he fell in the chest also. And the chest, the lids slammed shut, and the lid started rolling, because it was a chest on wheels. The chest started rolling. It was a chest on wheels, and it started rolling toward the front door, and it rolled out of the front door, out of their house atop the hill. And started rolling down the hill, and they were still yelling and arguing inside, and the dogs of Helm heard them yelling and arguing inside, and the dogs started running after the chest and barking like crazy. And the children, they saw the dogs running after the chest. "Ooh, what a fun new game!" And they started running after the dogs, who were running after the chest. And the mothers, well, they saw their children running after the dogs, after the chest, and, well, they didn't want the children to get dirty, of course, so the mothers started running after the children, and the husbands were thoroughly confused in the marketplace, seeing their wives running after the children, after the dogs, after this giant chest. So, well, the husbands had nothing better to do, so they ran after the wives. And down the hill, the chest went, followed by the dogs, followed by the children, followed by the mothers, followed by the fathers and the merchants. And the chest crashed through the marketplace. Oh, there was such mayhem. There were chickens on merchants' heads. There were watermelons everywhere. And all the bananas were gone. And finally, the chest came to a stop right after knocking over a bin of apples. The Helmites gathered around the chest. There were voices coming from the chest. "It must be demons!" cried one man. "Oh no, demons! What will we do? What will we do?" And the Helmites were frightened. They started yelling, and the children were not afraid of the demons, though. This game was far too fun. And one child took a step toward the chest, and he put his ear next to the chest.
"Those demons sound like the schoolteacher and his wife."
And one of the men stepped forward, and he listened to the chest. He was a very brave man. And he said, "It does sound like Zaniel and Zelda. What are they doing in a chest with demons?" Well, the Helmites had no idea what to do, so they called the wise men of Helm, and the wise men of Helm came to figure out what was going on. They walked up to the chest and opened it up, and out came Zaniel and Zelda, still arguing. Well, the wise men asked them what had happened, and eventually they figured out the story and realized that something had to be done. This could not happen again. So the wise men met for 7 days and 7 nights, and finally they came out with a decision, and they said to all of the Helmites, "We have decided that Zaniel and Zelda must not live on that hill. We will take away the chest with wheels. And to keep their craving of sweets low, we will have the baker give them honey cakes every week. And to make sure this never happens again, we will erect a sign, and we will place it outside of the town hall, and it will say, 'A schoolteacher may not live on a hill, a schoolteacher may not own a chest with wheels, and a schoolteacher may not have apple strudel.' So now, just as the Helmites, you too know the meaning of that sign." Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's quite an reenactment of this. Where did you learn this?
It was from a book that I came across, and I don't remember the author's name. Yeah. It's Strudel.
Yeah.
And I bought another book from him, and it's going to be delivered soon. I'm going to hopefully gain more stories from that.
It's wonderful. Yeah, and so I like that everybody that told the story today did it with such animation, Marty. You know, and it made it so much fun to listen to, you know, because you really got to become part of it. You really felt like it was part of you. You know, I felt every storyteller greatly enthused in the process of storytelling. It was just wonderful. Thank you all.
Thank you, Gary. You know, we really work with the students about imagining. If they imagine the story, then the listener will be pulled in with their own images they're making in their mind.
And then on Sunday, we're going to have the people will be able to take part in this and much more.
Oh, yes. There will be many different kinds of stories, all from different faith traditions.
Right.
And we'll just see the whole array of arts that celebrate that we have different beliefs and that we can come together in our different beliefs and appreciate. We go deep in our own. It's
right.
Certainly strengthened my own
definitely.
Catholic yeah. connection, being with all these different
all the
young
speakers
people.
There have your beliefs that you come from that you're honoring and sharing with us, which I appreciate.
Yeah, it just makes the world a richer place.
It really does. Thank you, Ben Russell, for that. And I want to thank all our storytellers, Emily Engler, Hebert. Thank you for that amazing, great story. Sarah Syed and giving us the wonderful story of Muhammad. And really learned, I think it broadened our understanding of Muhammad. And you really gave a very good account. Thank you. Thank you so much. And Adita Agashi, thank you for the story from the Mahabharata. It was very well said and very well spoken. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ben Russell, thank you so much for that. I don't think I'm going to think of Strudel again quite the same way. Marty Gillard, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Gary. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. You are the well right here at WRPI. I think you help us all together for spirit.
Well, let's do it again then.
Sometime. All right.
I appreciate it. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
And also the website, we want your website, MarnieGillard.com. And also childrenatthewell.org. Thank you.
That's right.
Shine.